Hello and welcome to this, the 19th episode of For the Love of Chiropractic. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Freeman, and I'm so glad you're here today. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you take a moment, hit subscribe, leave a 5-star review, so that way you never miss a single episode. And while this week's show is going to be fantastic, and I think you're really going to enjoy it, on next week's show, we're going to have our first ever guest, a man who is considered by many to be the patriarch of chiropractic in today's world, a man who was taught by B.J. Palmer himself. He has so many things to share with us about where chiropractic has been, and where he sees it going and growing, and what it takes for you to be successful as a chiropractor in today's world. So make sure you listen and subscribe so you don't miss next week's episode. And here we go with this week's show. On today's episode of For the Love of Chiropractic, we're going to be talking about the numbers that run the practice. The reason we're talking about it, if you're driving down the street and you're not paying any attention to your speedometer, you have no idea how fast you're going, you have no idea when you're going to get there, you have no idea where you're really going even. But by looking at the numbers, by looking at how fast you're going, by looking at how well the engine is working, you know what the machine is doing, and you can predictably know where you're going, know when you're going to get there, and improve it if that's what you want to do. So let's get started with today's show. Welcome to another episode of For the Love of Chiropractic. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Freeman. I've been in practice for over 30 years, and I continue to work in a million-dollar practice that I built, ran, and sold. I've taught, lectured, and coached our profession, and helped so many chiropractors build the practice and the life of their dreams. And now, I want to help you do the same. So here's today's show. As I said in the introduction, on today's show, we're going to be talking about the statistics that run the practice, or the numbers that the practice actually creates. I know it's math, and math really scares some people, but this is so important to look at, because what the practice is doing statistically is a measure of how your practice is going and growing. Or perhaps to use another example, your practice is like a car or an airplane. You need to know the numbers so you know how this thing is operating and working. You need to know the speed. You have a speedometer. It gives you a readout. On an automobile, you also have an RPM gauge, tells you how hard the engine is working to get you to that speed. And you want to know how hard the engine is working to get you to the volume, to the level that you're working at. And just like an automobile, your practice is a fine race car. Think of it that way. So you want to tune it to perfection for absolute optimum performance. And as we're looking at that, maybe make changes along the way to make it go even better, even smoother, maybe even faster. If you're driving along in an old stick shift car and you're cruising along in third gear, that's just fine. And you're humming along and the engine is humming and it's all good. But what happens when you switch it into fourth, fifth, or even sixth gear? Oh, now it's just going along so much easier. The engine doesn't have to work as hard, and you're cruising down the road at an even better speed, more comfortably. That's why we look at the statistics. That's why we look at the gauges, the readout information, to tell us where we're going and how to grow. And I know from the feedback that I've gotten from a bunch of doctors over the past dozen plus episodes that some of you have been in practice for decades and you think you know this stuff. But especially for those doctors, there's an additional piece, an additional statistic that you've probably never looked at that we're going to be talking about towards the end that you're going to go, wow, I never thought of that. And you'll be thankful that you listened to this entire episode. So as we get started, there's 5 pieces of information that you're going to want to pull out of your computer from a spreadsheet, or if you're really old school, you could go back and pull them off of your daily appointment book, because I'm sure you have the numbers written there. So first of all, you need the number of new patients that you've seen, whether it's by the week or by the month or year to date. Number 2 will be the regular patient visits. Even if they were treated for free, even if they came in for a complimentary examination, whatever it may be, the total number of regular patient visits that were seen by the week, by the month, or year to date. And then from your billing computer, you're going to need your services, you'll need your collections, and you'll need your base overhead. Now I'm going to go back and explain each one of these, because making sure you have the number right is going to make everything else make perfect sense. So starting from the beginning, new patients are defined as a new patient, someone who comes in the office. I know some doctors break down new patient into two categories, new patient opportunity versus new patient. And those doctors often only count a person as a new patient if they actually choose to begin care. And I think you're cheating your statistics and not really taking an honest look at what your practice is currently doing and how you can grow and improve. I think every person who comes into the office who's willing to take time to sit down with you, fill out your paperwork, tell you their story, and you get their full history, and they have an examination so you can figure out what's wrong, that counts as a new patient. Because they've taken time out of their life to find their way to your office and come in and talk to you. Clearly, they want your help. And as we talked about on the Report of Findings episode several months ago now, if they choose not to start care, it means you either didn't identify the problem or you didn't explain to them in a way that they understood that you really can help them. Because those are the only two good reasons that a person doesn't start care. The second statistic is the regular patient visit. Even if they come in as a new patient and it's free, that counts as a patient visit. We want the total number of visits, the total number of human beings that walked in your office to receive any type of service, that counts under the regular patient visit. The next statistic that we want to get a hold of are total services. This is the amount that you have billed out for the day, for the week, for the month, year to date. But if you're still doing health insurance, you want to make sure that you're subtracting out any contractual write-off. So for example, if you're billing out a visit at $100, but you already know the insurance company has already told you they're only going to pay $60 of it, that's fine. You subtract that out because there's no way to collect that money because you've already agreed to take less for it. And again, this becomes important because when we start to look at the statistics of it, we know how we're doing, how our billing department is doing, how our collection department is doing, and that's important to improve the practice, to improve the business. And the other number that we care about is the total collections. At the end of the week, at the end of the month, or year to date, how much money has actually been collected for the business? The benchmark for this, not including personal injury cases, is 90%. You should be collecting at least 90% of the money that is collectible on a regular ongoing basis. Obviously, 100% would be absolutely ideal. Very, very few practices actually get to 100 when you're dealing with insurance and other third-party payers. Obviously, if it's a cash practice, your collections and your services end up mirroring each other's, again, except in cases, you know, like a personal injury case or anything else where there's a negotiated settlement at the end of the day. And the final number that I'm going to ask you to get is your base overhead. The base overhead are the expenses that it takes to run the practice. So it's your rent, it's the salary, it's heat, power, and lights, it's your phone, it's office supplies, it's your licensing fees. If there are associate doctors, their base salary. I do not think it should include the owner's salary or the owner's income. I do not think it should include any of the perks that sometimes get thrown into the business for the owner. Oh, I'm renting my BMW through the practice. If your accountant says those things are fine, that's fine, but I want you to back it out for the purpose of the calculations that we're going to be talking about. When we talk about base overhead, some doctors will add in a minimal salary for themselves, similar to the minimal salary that an associate doctor will have, to have the number in that way. You can do it either way, but it needs to be that bare bones number for the statistic that we're going to be looking at when we get to that point. So revisiting collection, base overhead, and services, there is a point here that I want to make. If a patient has a balance and they leave care and you're unable to collect it, it's too small an amount that you don't want to turn it over to an attorney for collections, or you choose not to use collection procedures in your practice, but there's an amount outstanding of, you know, 100, 200, whatever the number may be. And time goes by and that number has been sitting on your books, and that person calls because they realize they need your chiropractic care and they want to come back in. What do you do at that point? Do you write it off? Do you confront the patient and say, oh, by the way, from the last time you were in, there was a small balance of $75, $100, $200 that needs to be taken care of. How would you like to take care of that today? Take care of that today. Put it on a credit card. What are the arrangements that you're willing to make? But we need to clear that off the books when the person is returning back to care. It's not okay. It's not a good idea to just let that continue to roll because it was a problem before. It's going to be a problem in the future also. Let's handle it and take care of it. So now that you have the base statistics, those base numbers that we talked about, let's talk about what we're going to do with them. We're going to do some very, very simple math that's going to give you some incredibly important information to help move the practice forward. So the first one we're going to talk about is called PVA, patient visit average. The patient visit average is all of the patient visits for the period of time we're talking about divided by the number of new patients that have come into the office during that same period of time. So by way of example, if you saw 100 visits in a given week and you'd had 4 new patients that week, 100 divided by 4 gives you a number of 25. So that means statistically for the week, your patient visit average is 25. That means patients stick around in your care statistically for 25 visits. But per week is really not a good way to look at PVA. The minimum amount of time that PVA makes sense is by the month. You can look at it by the month, by the quarter, semi-annually, or for the entire year. Obviously, the longer the period of time, the more accurate statistically it really is. But month by month gives you a really good idea of how long people are sticking around with your office and the number of visits that they're getting under your care. Or if you have associate doctors and the associate doctors each see their own patients as opposed to all the doctors seeing all the patients, you can calculate the PVA for each of the associate doctors, again, to have a good idea of, number one, the care that they're recommending for patients, and number two, if they're effectively communicating that to their patients, how well are they following through? Also, the number tells you about the kind of care you or your associate doctors are actually providing to their patients. If the PVA is at 10 or less, you're strictly providing acute care. You're getting the person out of pain and nothing else. If that PVA is somewhere between 12 and 20, obviously you're giving relief care and some strengthening care. You're making some fundamental change to the muscles. If the PVA number is between 20 and 35, you're taking the person through that acute care, relief, correction, and beginning the strengthening phase as well. You're really starting to put the pieces together. If the PVA is over 40, you're providing relief, correction, strengthening, and into maintenance care, optimum wellness, where health really lives. And as we've talked about on previous episodes, there's so much more to chiropractic care than just getting rid of the pain. Chiropractic is so fantastic at actually getting the body to work normally the way that it's supposed to, not just get rid of the pain. There are faster ways just to get rid of the pain. Somebody has a headache, tell them to take aspirin, ibuprofen, Motrin, Tylenol, any of the drugs, if that's the whole goal. But no, let's actually correct the problem. Let's be chiropractors and correct the issue, not cover the symptoms up. Okay, so now the second statistic we're going to look at is called office visit average, or OVA. Sometimes it's called DVA, dollar visit average. But the bottom line is, it's what's the amount of money, statistically speaking, that the office collects each time a patient is seen. So you take the total collections and divide that by the total number of patient visits. You can look at that by the month, quarterly, or obviously, you know, year to date, or for an entire year. But statistically speaking, OVA starts to make the most sense when you look at it quarterly or larger than that. When you go less than quarterly, it's not really giving you a clear indication of what's going on just because of the way the numbers statistically play out. And as we've talked about, the longer the time on any of these, the better they really are. So the third statistic we're going to look at is called case visit average, or CVA. So again, we take the total patient visits and divide that by the total collections. What that then tells us is for each new patient who comes in the office, statistically, that's how much money the business can expect based on that case being properly taken care of in the office. So to get this person through the episode and get them better optimum health, again, depending on the level of care that you are choosing to provide in your office, that's what the case visit average tells us. Now, the final statistic we want to look at is the one that's newer. Lots of doctors have not heard of this. It's called the cost to see the patient statistic, sometimes called a CTS or a CSP. The CSP, cost to see the patient, is the real overhead number. So that pared down number, what it takes to cover all the bills, maybe it includes a small salary for you or maybe not, and that's divided by all the regular patient visits. And what you'll end up finding out is the cost to process each patient visit in your office. We're providing phenomenal care, providing great health care, helping people be healthy, get healthy, live their optimal life, and the bottom line is there are bills to pay. The electric company wants you to pay for your electricity. The landlord wants the rent paid, etc. So what does it cost to see that patient in the office? And the reason this is so important is a lot of doctors that I know like to provide some charity care. They like to do some pro bono work where they're not earning anything at all. Some doctors that I know and work with lots of different health insurance companies, and the third-party payers often are paying less and less as time goes by. Bottom line, what does it cost you to see the patient in the office? There's one doctor who I've known for years and years. When he went through and figured out this statistic, he actually found that one of the large carriers was paying him less than it costs him to process the patient in the office. Lo and behold, it very quickly became an easy decision to drop that insurance carrier. Other patients filled in his schedule. He became much more profitable because he wasn't losing money each time he saw a patient. And the exact opposite of that statistic is the additional money that's called profit. That profit is what pays your bills. That's what raises your family. That's what pays for your vacations. That's the money that you deserve for providing phenomenal care to the patients and making this your life's dedication. And the final statistic that we want to talk about and look at is called the drop visit analysis. The drop visit analysis is so incredibly important because it tells you at what point your patients drop out of care. So for example, if you recommend 20 visits for a patient, do they really do all 20, or do they drop out at 18, at 15, at 12? Do you even know? If you recommend 40 visits for a patient, where are they dropping out of care? So let's take a minute and talk about how we do this drop visit analysis. So the best way to do this is go back 90 days and make a list of all the new patients who have come into your office for the past 90 days. You have their list of names written out on a piece of paper. You can do it on a spreadsheet, but I really think that this works better old school pen and paper. And then you go through using your computer or your record keeping, and you see how many visits each one of those patients actually have come into the office so far over the past 90 days. And you want to make sure that you add after each person's name and those number of visits that are there, whether or not they're still under care or they have dropped out. I like to use just a check mark or an X. Check, they're still under care. X, they've disappeared. And then on a second piece of paper, go through down the left column and just write the numbers 1 through 30. And that represents the number of visits the person has been in. And then simply go through and put a tally mark at each one. So if Susie Smith only came in for one visit, put a tally mark by the 1. If Stevie Jones came in for 8 visits and then disappeared, then you put a tally mark at that point. And by doing this, what you're going to see is there's going to be a grouping where your patients seem to drop out of care. They don't seem to follow through with what you've recommended. And depending on where that number is, there's typically a very easy solution. It's far too complicated to go into each level on the podcast here, but what I'll invite every listener to do is reach out via the website fortheloveofchiropractic.com, and I or somebody on my team will get back to you with the answer for what that drop visit analysis means to your practice and how you can improve that. I know that was a lot of information, but if you take the time to do this, you're going to get information that tells you how to improve your practice because you know where you really are right now and what the stuck points are, because record keepers are record breakers. And that's how we create better practices to help more people live healthier lives. All right, and that's our show for today. If you have a question about today's show or your own practice, feel free to reach out at fortheloveofchiropractic.com. Before making changes to your practice, be sure to seek legal advice regarding those changes and regulations in your state. For the Love of Chiropractic is an RGF production, all rights reserved. And thanks for listening. Original music provided by Hunter Rich Music.